the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into it, I just filmed my next music video this past weekend on Saturday. Filmed for my single Call the Shots, so look out for it. I'm going outside the box with this one, that's for sure. Now, when people say they're going outside the box, it's usually something crazy and out of control. Well, that's the exact opposite for me, because usually what I do is I'm crazy and out of control. Well, this time I'm switching it up on y'all. I'm not going to give away too much about what's going on in it, but I'm just doing something way different for me for once. I definitely stepped outside of my comfort zone, which was actually really cool. Definitely learned some things for this video, so look out for it. Call the Shots should be coming out in a couple of weeks here. Filmed it with my homie Jose Nahar, as always, Nahar Media. So yeah, but let's get right into the sports. With UFC 278, my dude, Kamaru Usman, man, he got knocked the fuck out. Could not believe it, but man, it was crazy. And this fight is exactly why I like UFC and boxing, because there's always these matchups where there's just an ultra heavyweight. They're the champ. They've won it all. They haven't lost. And that was Usman, man. He hasn't lost in years. He hasn't lost since his second fight. He has won 15 straight. He was going for a UFC record of the most wins in a row. So this is the guy. And then you got Leon Edwards coming in, who's not a bad, he is not a bad fighter. There's nothing wrong with his game. They've fought before, but like I said on Friday's show, that the first fight, it wasn't for a title. Both guys were unknowns, so it wasn't the same type of caliber fight that the second matchup was. And it was just hilarious, though, because like I said, the reason why I love UFC is because of what happened in this fight. And that's because Leon Edwards, he came into this matchup, definitely the underdog. I didn't believe he was going to win. Of course, you have a chance. You always have a chance coming into it, but I did not pick him to win. And he was getting beat. Usman, he owned this fight. It was his. And it was really funny because in the fifth round, as it's coming to a close, it looked like this is going to end. And it's gonna go to decision, and it's looking like it's gonna go Usman's way, because he did. He, like I said, he dominated this fight. And the announcers, as it's kind of coming to a close in the fifth round, they're talking about how this is gonna be a moral victory for Leon Edwards because he stayed in it, blah blah blah. And then all of a sudden, he just kicks Usman right in the head, and Usman is just seeing stars. The look on his face is gone. He was gone. And it was kind of like he was stunned, but he just got kicked in the face at the same time. And when I say he was stunned, it's not because he was kicked in the face. It's stunned because he knew he lost. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe I lost. Now, obviously I can't tell what his thoughts were in that moment, but it's just the look on his face was insane. And it was just crazy to actually see Leon Edwards come out on top. And like I said, that is exactly why I like UFC, because he was just about to lose and he turns it around on everybody and just gets the right kick in and gets the knockout at the right time. And even he said in his post-game victory, he said that this was not his best fight, and he's looking forward to matchup number three, which there should most definitely be a number three coming up here. I mean, obviously they haven't scheduled it or anything, but there's going to be a number three, I would imagine. And so he said, hopefully in matchup number three, he's going to show up. But it was definitely an insane victory. Congratulations to Leon Edwards. That's a huge win over a spectacular fighter. And you really got to give it up to Usman either, or too, just because he didn't act like a little bitch either when he lost. He totally took it like a man. He said he's going to come back and be stronger than ever. And hey, just sometimes you win some, you lose some. And that really is just what it is. But I imagine he's going to come back strong. I wouldn't count him out in matchup number three, just like you can't count out Edwards either. But what a great fight. And now let's get on to the top 10 MLB power rankings. A little bit of movement here, but not at number one. So let's start it off. It's been the theme of the last couple of weeks. The number one team on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the stupid ass Los Angeles Dodgers. Not only were they the first team to 80 games this week, but they are currently at 84 wins. They're 84 and 36. Still, no other team has hit the 80 win plateau in the season. So only the Dodgers are currently at 80 wins. This past week, they played the Miami Marlins and the Milwaukee Brewers, and they're 7-3 in their last 10 games. They actually swept the Marlins this week. And, you know, I was talking about Alcantara on Friday. Actually, I've been talking about him all season because he is the leading Cy Young candidate in the NL, and he got slaughtered by the Dodgers yesterday. I mean, it was his worst outing of the season. So the Dodgers are really just turning it on. Although the Brewers played them well earlier in the week. They took 2 of 3. So while the Dodgers, they were down against the Brewers, they definitely turned it on against the Marlins. And actually, the sweep against the Marlins is their fourth sweep in the month of August. Yeah, and today is August 22nd. So we still have a week and a half left, basically, of August, and they've had four sweeps already. So that just goes to show how good the Dodgers are right now. You know, Cody Bellinger, he had a great week, and he's kind of heating up. So while he's kind of only batting around 200, he still is he's a dominating fixture in their batting order, and he can really, once he gets hot, he's really difficult to stop. And if everybody else gets cold, well, there's still Bellinger. Then Mookie Betts, he's still having a great year. Freddie Freeman, it's insane how he continues to dominate at the age he's at. And then also, as if the Dodgers starting pitching couldn't be good and great as it is already, they get Dustin May back. They got him back this weekend, and he's coming back from Tommy John surgery. And if you'll recall, actually during the bubble season in 2020, when we had the shortened season, that was the year the Dodgers won the World Series, and Dustin May was a big part of that season. So he just came back, and he's coming back at the right time. He actually had a very dominating start, so he came back at the right time. It's August. We still have about a month left to go until playoffs start. So yeah, he came back at the right time so he could get some starts under his belt and get ready for the playoffs, because I imagine the Dodgers are going to be one of the teams to beat come playoff time. All right, and then at the number two spot on my top 10 MLB power rankings this week, I have the Atlanta Braves moving on up. They really had a dominating week. Overall record right now of 75-48. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. They played Houston great this past weekend. They almost got the sweep, actually. And then they also played the Mets very well also. And, you know, Charlie Morton, he is on fire. I don't even know the last time Charlie Morton when he had a bad game. So that just goes to show how well he's played right now. Then Olsen, he got hot this week. I mean, he's had a good season so far, but this week he's really turned it on. And then Travis d'Arnaud, that guy, he's as if the Braves couldn't get enough offense, he's really turned it on the past couple of weeks as well, and he's made some really game-changing plays. So I had to bump the Braves up just because they did. They played two great teams this week, both Houston and the Mets, and dominated both of them, playing great. Starting pitching is out of control. Relief pitching is out of control. And defensively, they're playing great. And then, obviously, they're killing it with the bats. So the Atlanta Braves bumped up to number two this week. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the New York Mets. Overall record of 79-44, so they are almost at that 80-win mark. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Philadelphia Phillies and the Atlanta Braves, and they actually played a really good game against the Phillies yesterday. It was just a back-and-forth game where just both teams were just hitting them out the park, and it was kind of hilarious to see Phillies fans get their hearts ripped out yet again yesterday. Mark Canha, he has been having a great season. He's had quite a few walk-offs all season long. Then you got Brandon Nimmo. He also had a great game yesterday, but he's also just had a solid season. Then Starling Marte, he continues to just knock it out of the park and really make some huge plays for the Mets. And then Pete Alonso, he is tied for the league lead in RBIs with 102 RBIs, and dude's just been unstoppable. So the Mets at number three. Then I've got at number four in my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Houston Astros. Overall record of 78-45. 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Atlanta Braves and the Chicago White Sox. Like I said, they got pretty much owned by the Braves, and the White Sox actually took it to them too, although they got them back and had that huge game that I talked about on Friday where they won like, what, 21-3 or 21-5, something crazy like that. But regardless, the Astros got back on track. They got Yordan Alvarez back. He had to be taken to the hospital the other day, some type of illness or whatever. My guess is he probably was dehydrated. I mean, it's August, and that kind of shit happens all the time. So Alvarez, he came back strong yesterday, had a big game. He's also had a big week, and continues to dominate behind the plate. Kyle Tucker as well, just flying under the radar and just continuing to hit for this Astros team and just cause a commotion on those bases. And then you also have Peña, their rookie shortstop. This guy has really turned it on as well. It's like the Astros just can't get enough offense. That's what I mean, man, about the NL. Right now, I've only discussed National League teams outside of the Astros, but like the NL is going to be crazy compared to the AL, because the AL right now is being dominated by the Astros and their offense and their pitching and their relief pitching, and I don't know if anybody's going to be able to hold up against them in a series, in a 5-game or a 7-game series, whereas the NL, it's going to be a completely different story, where I just talked about the Dodgers and their offense and their starting pitching and their bullpen. Then you got the same issue with the Mets and the Braves. They are dominating in all of those positions as well. So it's just going to be crazy, especially in the National League come playoff time. But then also with the Astros, since I was just talking about them and they're number four on my top 10 MLB power rankings, their starting pitching is one of the most dominating in the league. And then you had Jose Urquidy, who just had an absolutely dominating start this weekend as well. So it just it's not slowing down at all for the Astros, and they're just dominating from start to finish. Then at number five on my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the St. Louis Cardinals, another National League team. Overall record of 69-51, and they have caught fire at the perfect time. And the Cardinals are never a team you want to face in the postseason. Never. Even if you are the number one overall seed, you don't want to face the Cardinals, because they just always put it together at this time of year. 8-2 in their last 10 games. They actually have the longest winning streak in the league right now at 7. This past week, they played the Arizona Diamondbacks and the Colorado Rockies. But Albert Pujols, this guy, you know, he hasn't had the typical Pujols season, but he's closing in on 700 home runs, and he had a 2-home run game this week. Then yesterday he hit another home run, and he is currently at 692 career home runs. Now, he did reiterate that he is going to retire after this season. So even if he comes up short with like 699 home runs, he's not going to play a game next year just to get to 700. So I do believe he can make 700. I mean, this is Albert Pujols. It's what he's done, and he has caught fire at the perfect time. And so we'll see what happens with him if he could get to 700. I would really like to see it happen. Then Nolan Arenado, he had a great week. And then Paul Goldschmidt. There is nothing bad you could say about this guy. He is batting a 340 right now, 31 home runs, 100 RBIs. He just hit the 100 RBI plateau this weekend. So, yeah, the Cardinals on fire at the right time of the year. Then at number six on my top 10 MLB power rankings, and they just keep on falling. It's like they're Alicia Keys, motherfuckers. Keep on falling. in and out of my top 10. Well, actually, they have not fallen out of my top 10 yet, but man, their ranking is falling each and every single week because they just can't seem to get it going. Overall record of 74-48, but they're 3-7 in their last 10 games. They do have a solid lead in their division, so that's what's in their favor right now, is that they built a lead up, so they've got such a strong lead right now. And then the rest of the teams in the East, they have kind of slowed down, and except for the Rays. The Rays are starting to catch fire as well, but I don't know if they've got enough to take over in the end, but hey, you never know. The Rays are always sneaky like that. But anyways, this week they did play some division opponents. They played the Toronto Blue Jays and the Tampa Bay Rays, who obviously played them really well. Actually, probably the best game the Yankees played this week was actually yesterday's game, where they did get the walk-off with, well, not the walk-off, but Benintendi came in. He finally hit his first home run as a Yankee, and it ended up being the game-winning home run. Aaron Judge, only dude getting production for this Yankees offense. It's really gone cold, especially since Stanton has been placed on the injured list, and he is supposed to come back this week, and they really, really could use his offense because Aaron Judge is all they've got right now. Still leads the league with 46 home runs, tied with Pete Alonso for the RBI lead with 102 and batting a .293. So Aaron Judge has no problems. It's just the rest of the team around him. Their bats are ice cold right now. So we'll see what the Yankees got the rest of this week. But right now, it is not looking good for the Yankees. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Tampa Bay Rays, 65-55 overall record this season, 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Kansas City Royals and the New York Yankees, and Randy Arozarena, he has finally stepped it up. You know, he has had a very streaky season, but he seems to have caught fire. He's really caught fire at the right time. You know, like I said, they're behind the Yankees right now. I believe they're 8 games behind the Yankees for the division. So if he and the rest of this team is able to just get some solid wins and keep beating division opponents, especially including the Yankees, I would not be shocked that the Tampa Bay Rays are the team that sneaks up behind the Yankees and takes away the East from them. And I think Randy Arozarena getting hot at this time of year, it's the perfect way and the perfect recipe for them to get it going. Then you also had Harold Ramirez. He had a great week as well. He had a good game yesterday. He went something for like 3-for-4. And he's had a couple game-winning runs. And then also they're starting pitching, dominating. And Rasmussen had another dominating start yesterday. I think he's had like his last 3 or 4 starts have just been absolute gems. So the Rays are putting it together at the right time. And like I said, the Yankees are crumbling. So if there is one team in their division who could potentially get up there, it could possibly be the Rays. Now, there's still plenty of baseball to go. Yankees are getting Stanton back. But if they continue this ice-cold streak, I look to see the Rays sneak in and win that division. Then number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Cleveland Guardians, 64-56 overall record on the season, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the White Sox and the Detroit Tigers. And, you know, Shane Bieber, he is back. He started the season off kind of shaky, kind of slow, not the same dominating fixture he has been in the past, but he has found his groove, and he has not let up really since the All-Star break. He's been really hot this second half of the season, and this is when you need to be hot. It's a tight division race, too, between the Guardians, the Twins, and the White Sox, so they're really going to need Bieber to step it up. But they also have this young, new pitcher, Tristan McKenzie. He has been dominating this season. He just had another great start this weekend with 14 strikeouts. I believe he had, 11 strikeouts last week and then like 7 the start before. So this guy, you look for him and Bieber, if they keep it up, the Guardians could take this division. And then you also got Jimenez. He's having a quietly strong season. I mean, he's been batting like a 3-something. I didn't write down his stats, but he's on one of my fantasy teams, and he really is a solid start, and he's got a solid stat line, and he really is. He's making some great defensive plays for the Guardians as well. So they are in a huge division battle, but even if they don't win the division, they're still they're still in good position to get the wild card. So I think the Guardians could be a team you need to watch out for come playoff time, just because these pitchers, their starting pitching is looking pretty solid right now. But the Guardians are definitely a very streaky team also, so it could be right now they're on a good streak, and then as the season goes on more towards the postseason, they might start getting cold. So who knows, but right now they're on some, and Bieber's really stepping it up. And this young cat, Tristan McKenzie, he's something else. I have a feeling this is going to be the next pitcher that we're talking about who's just dominating the league for years to come. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings is the Chicago White Sox. Overall record of 62-59, 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week they played the Cleveland Guardians and the Houston Astros. Now offensively, they're really getting it going. AJ Pollock, he has really turned out to be a game changer for this team. When they traded for him the offseason, I didn't really think that was going to be a big deal. I just kind of felt like he was going to come in, play a decent role, and whatever. But he's really turned into a huge source of offense, especially the last month. He's really got it going. Moncada has also got it going, and then Eloy Jimenez as well. So offensively, the White Sox seem to have got it going, and they really need to, because like I just said about the Guardians, they are in a huge battle for this division. And right now, the White Sox and the Guardians, they both kind of have the same type of team where they're streaky. And so we'll see if either of these teams are able to keep it going. One thing I will say, Johnny Cueto. Now, he used to be a Giants pitcher, so I got love for this dude. I've actually always had love for Cueto. He is an amazing pitcher. I just love watching him pitch. He's just got such an amazing delivery, and he's just a beautiful pitcher, in my opinion. And it's great to see, because he is coming off of he was injured the last couple of seasons with the Giants, so it was really bad, a really bad end for him. Whereas the beginning was just great. And then when he played with the Royals years ago, he was also dominating then. So, but anyways, he has really turned it on. He got injured earlier in the season, but then once he's come back from this injury, he has had 10 straight quality starts where he almost pitched a complete game shutout just the other day. So he has really turned this team around. And if he's able to kind of keep it up going, I feel like he's that solid veteran who is keeping this team in line for the playoffs. And get him in the postseason, that is not a pitcher you want to face. If he's healthy and pitching the way with that crazy solid delivery he has, you don't want to see Cueto come playoff time. All right, and then rounding out my top 10 MLB power rankings, I have the Milwaukee Brewers. Overall record of 64-56. They are 4-6 in their last 10 games. This past week, they played the Chicago Cubs and the Dodgers. And the reason why they finally busted through the top 10 is they seem to have gotten over, because the trade deadline hit, they traded away a couple of really solid players, which kind of put them in a slump, but now they really seem to have picked it up. They, like I said earlier when I was discussing the Dodgers, they played the Dodgers great. Andrew McCutchen, he's really had a great season. And then Rowdy Tellez, he's been very streaky, but this past week he really raked it in. So the Brewers, they're starting to get back on track. And speaking of trades, and actually the Brewers made a trade with them for Josh Hader. The San Diego Padres, ever since they made these huge blockbuster trades at the trade deadline, man, this team has really fallen apart. And it's not just the Tatis thing, because they weren't playing good before he was suspended for the 80 games for the PEDs. Soto hasn't really found a groove. He hasn't really panned out for them yet. And then you got Hader, who they're actually going to be taking out of the closer role, at least for the next couple of games, because he hasn't been good. So it is just really crazy to see that the Padres made all these big moves to try and make a big postseason push. And so far, it hasn't turned out for them. So that's just very interesting to see because, I mean, when you traded for Soto and Hader, you obviously were making big moves. You were obviously not just looking to the future, but you were looking to the potential of what was going to happen this year. And right now, the Padres are in line for a wild card spot, definitely not in line for the NL West. Let's just put it this way. The Dodgers have a very comfortable lead. I didn't write it down, but I'm pretty sure they have like an 18-game lead right now on the Padres. And then the Giants are so fucking shitty. I think they've got like a fucking like 24.5-game lead on the Giants right now. So, yeah, nobody is going to take the NL West from the Dodgers. But the Padres, I think they're the second team for the wild card right now. But still, they really have not got it going since that trade. And that's just... it's just crazy, but that's just the way it goes. All right, and now let's get into my NFL season predictions. Today we are going to do the AFC and the NFC South. So let's kick it off with the NFC South and how I think that's going to shape out this season. I do believe the NFC South is one of the worst divisions in the league. Actually, the NFC, that's kind of how it is. You know, the NFC South is horrible. NFC East is horrible. NFC North is horrible. The NFC West is okay, but for the most part, you know, all the NFC divisions have, like, one really good team in it, and then the rest are just, kind of shitty, whereas in the AFC, it's like, you got the AFC West, like, all four teams could potentially make the playoffs, so, we're not getting to those. We'll get to those predictions on Friday. So, let's kick it off with the NFC South. And of course, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to win this division. I think their overall record is going to be 14-3. I do think they're going to be the best team in the NFC. A lot of people are kind of freaking out about what's going on with Tom Brady and him taking time off. And it's just kind of like, I know it's very not Tom Brady-esque to be taking time off, but it's also not Tom Brady-esque to be retiring and then unretiring and then come to find out he was probably going to go play for the Dolphins and then that didn't work out. And so a whole lot of shit's up in the air, but I don't question his commitment to the team and I also don't question his commitment to winning. He's healthy. And as long as he's healthy, I expect the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to always be competitive. And this is a horrible division. So the fact that it's a horrible division is going to get them a lot of wins, regardless of what the rest of the schedule turns out for them. This past offseason, they did lose Rob Gronkowski to retirement. So it's going to be interesting to see how Brady plays without him. Then they also lost Ndamukong Suh, not a huge factor to this team, but he still was a pretty good player. And then they lost offensive lineman Ali Marpet. He retired this season, and that is a big deal just because the offensive line, not only did they lose him, but they also lost somebody in the preseason game on Saturday, and he's out for the whole season. So Brady's lost a couple of his offensive linemen. We know that's a big deal. For Tom Brady, because once he gets running around, that's how you mess up his game. Get him running, and it ain't a good game. They did add Julio Jones and Shaq Mason. I think both are good moves, especially Julio Jones, just to add a little bit more depth to this receiving core, which is one of the best in the league for sure, but they are injury prone. And they are a little bit older now because you add in Julio Jones, he isn't any younger, but this dude, he used to be the best receiver in the league. So when you have an amazing receiving core like this with Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Russell Gage, and then rounding it out with Julio Jones, and then even the guys behind them, Scotty Miller, and I can't remember the last one, but I mean, all six of them are very capable, very excellent receivers. So I do expect to see a few of them kind of have injuries here and there because they are all Evans, Godwin, and Jones, all three injury-prone receivers. But the good thing is I kind of feel like they're all going to balance each other out. If, say, Evans is getting double-teamed, well, then you have Godwin and Jones to choose from. So I think the wide receiving core is definitely going to be the strength of this team, and Brady's definitely going to need to rely on them. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I think they're a solid team. There really isn't a weakness on the defensive side of the ball, unless they start getting injured because they don't have a lot of depth, especially in the secondary. I think their biggest weakness this season is going to be their running back position. Like I just said, they're going to have some problems with the offensive line because they're missing two guys that have been staples of the offensive line. But also, Leonard Fournette, he lost a step for sure last year. And then this offseason hasn't really been an impressive one for him this offseason. So I kind of see them not being great on the ground game. So I kind of feel like they're definitely going to make up for it in the receiving core, and they're definitely going to need to. So good thing they have a lot of weapons there. We do have a new coach for the Buccaneers, Todd Bowles. He's the coach. He's taken over for Bruce Arians, who's now in a front office role. So we'll see how that goes. I don't expect it to be a tumultuous season. I expect it to be a winning season mostly because they are in an awful division. And then also you have Tom Brady. You can't go wrong with Tom Brady. Then the second place team in the NFC South, I think, is going to be the Carolina Panthers. I think their overall record is going to be 8-9. This offseason, they lost Stephon Gilmore, even though they traded for him and then, you know, he got injured. So he didn't really play a huge role with the Panthers last year, but he still is an excellent cornerback. So it is a loss, in my opinion. And then they did add Baker Mayfield at the quarterback position. I think he is an improvement over Sam Darnold. I kind of feel like the Sam Darnold experiment, it showed it wasn't going to work, at least in this offense. I kind of have a feeling Sam Darnold's going to go the way of the backup quarterback at this point in time, because that's kind of just what he showed that he is. And so I think this is a slight upgrade for the Panthers, but unfortunately it's not, he's just a bridge quarterback. He's obviously not going to be their quarterback of the future. And so he's just a placeholder, and that's never a good thing for a team. You usually just become a 500 team. They also don't have that many weapons around him, especially at the receiver position. They've got a couple of good receivers, but their depth is just really bad. If Anderson ends up getting injured and missing some significant time, It's going to be pretty shaky at the receiver position. I will say, though, at the running back position, they are going to be solid. First of all, offensive line, they do have a very solid offensive line. So that's great for them right there. But then you got McCaffrey. If he's able to stay healthy, which has been a huge question mark for him the last couple of seasons, he's got to stay healthy. If he's able to stay healthy, he's one of the biggest playmakers in the league, and he's going to make a huge difference for them if healthy. But then right behind him, you got Chuba Hubbard, and then they signed Deontay Foreman as well, who's actually been a starter in this league. And so I kind of feel like the running back position is definitely going to be one of their strengths, and it should definitely cover up the problems that they have at the receiver position. They also have a very solid defense. So that's where I think the Panthers are going to get a few of these wins, is their defense is going to keep them in the game, and then their ground attack is going to be able to get them some scores. So I've got the Panthers having a very mediocre season, and I wouldn't be shocked if their coach ends up fired at the end of the season. That's why because for me, the Panthers they had such an odd offseason. I assumed they were going to go after one of the big-name quarterbacks, whether it be through the trade or through free agency, but they haven't done anything other than pick up Baker Mayfield. But they just picked him up right as training camp began, and I just felt that was just, like, too late. And like I said, he's just a placeholder. He is obviously not their future. I wouldn't be shocked if he's only there for this year. But I just found it odd that they really didn't do anything about their quarterback position, just because Matt Rhule is in a very he's on the hot seat this year. It's obvious. I mean, he was on the hot seat last year, but they obviously gave him a chance again this year. But I feel like this is it for him if they don't at least have a decent year. But I don't think they're going to have a decent year. I think it's just going to be a very mediocre year, 8-9 year from the Carolina Panthers. Then at number three, I think, is going to be the New Orleans Saints. I think their overall record is going to be 6-11. And they lost a lot this offseason, starting with their coach, Sean Payton. You know, they lost Drew Brees the year before, but now losing Sean Payton, this is a new team. And I kind of feel like the Saints fans might want to get those paper bags back and dust those off. out of your closets, because you're going to need those again. Because this team, I feel like, is going to have a very long rebuild, because they really didn't do much this offseason or last offseason to improve this team to actually be a contender. So outside of losing Sean Payton, they also lost a huge veteran presence in the locker room with Malcolm Jenkins. He retired, so they lost him. Now, they did add Tyrann Mathieu. So I think as far as playing on the field, that's going to be a huge boost right there, and he's going to take over the role for Jenkins. But I just don't really see a lot coming from this New Orleans Saints team. You know, Jameis Winston's going to be their starting quarterback. To me, he's kind of already proven he is not a good quarterback. He isn't really anything better than a backup quarterback, in my opinion. So he's going to be their starter. And he's a very injury-prone player, so who knows if he's even going to make it through the entire season. Then it was just announced that Michael Thomas, who has already missed all of last year and was injured the season before as well, so he's missed quite a bit of time. He already is injured he missed a preseason game because he's got some type of hamstring injury again. And I was going to say, one of the pros about this New Orleans Saints team is their wide receiving core and their running back core, because obviously running backs got Kamara over there. And I can't remember who's behind him, but I know the two guys behind him are just, they could be, I know the backup could be a starter. And then the third string, he's a good backup. But then the wide receiving core, like, cause they just added Jarvis Landry in the offseason. I was like, oh man, that's actually going to be pretty good. I didn't expect them to be lighting anybody up, because unfortunately for them on the offensive side of things, their offensive line is straight trash. It was one of the worst in the league last year, and they didn't do anything to improve that. So I just think the Saints are going to have a season of disarray. It's going to be awful, and the Saints fans may want to get those paper bags back out, because it might be one of those seasons for y'all. Sorry, but that's just how it goes. And then rounding out the NFC South, I think the Atlanta Falcons are not only going to be the worst team in their division, but I think they're going to be the worst team in the league. I think they're going to be that team who's going to go it's going to take weeks for them to get their first win. I do think they'll go 1-16. It's always difficult to pick teams to go undefeated or also pick teams to not get a win. Now, when it happens in the season where there's a team that hasn't got a win yet, I do root for them to not get a win, because I think that shit's hilarious, unless it's my team, of course. But the Falcons, I think they're going to be that team, because if you look at their roster, it's the who the fuck is this roster. Outside of Kyle Pitts at tight end and Cordarrelle Patterson at wide receiver, those are their only two good big names on the team. Everybody else is straight trash. First of all, they lost Matt Ryan in the offseason. Not a big deal, just because you can kind of tell Matt Ryan's on the tail end of his career. So they did end up trading him to the Indianapolis Colts. So they're obviously in a huge rebuilding mode, and Marcus Mariota is taking over for Matt Ryan as a starting quarterback. I don't see how that's an improvement, but okay. So it's going to be a very, very long season if you're an Atlanta Falcons fan. I think they're going to be the worst team in the league. I think it's going to be one of those things where you're like, when are they going to get a win? When are they going to get a win? And they probably won't get their first win till like week 12 or something crazy like that. So expect the Atlanta Falcons to be the worst or one of the bottom five teams of the season, because wow, just go look at their roster for shits and giggles. If you really want a good laugh, look at that Atlanta Falcons roster and go, who are y'all? Who is this? What the fuck? But they are absolutely in rebuilding mode out in Atlanta, which is not anything new for them. All right, and then moving on to the AFC South. Starting with the team who I think is going to win the South, AFC South, I think is going to be the Indianapolis Colts. I think they're going to go 11-6 this year. They did trade away Carson Wentz, which I think was a good move. Carson Wentz has proven he's not that good of a quarterback. And they did end up trading for Matt Ryan, which is an improvement over Wentz. That's for sure, because Ryan is way more accurate. And if you put a good team around Matt Ryan, he's definitely going to shine. And while he is old, and he's definitely not the same player he used to be, he does have a very, very good team surrounding him. They also added in the offseason Stephon Gilmore to this already one of the best. They had like what the top, they were a top five defense for sure last year. And they just added Stephon Gilmore. So I feel like the Colts are probably going to be top five for sure, if not number one defense in the league. So they definitely have a solid, stocked, stacked, crazy defense. So look out for them. But offensively, they also have it going on. I think their only weakness on offense is going to be the wide receiver position, because beyond Pittman, it's pretty weak. But the running back position, obviously, you got Jonathan Taylor, who's been having a great couple of seasons. Their offensive line is exactly what Matt Ryan needs, by the way, because Matt Ryan is not a mobile quarterback, so he needs a solid offensive line to keep him standing. And but the good thing is not only does he have that offensive line right behind him, he's got the running backs, and he's got Jonathan Taylor, who could just take off, and he can also catch as well. So I think this is going to be kind of a resurgent year for Matt Ryan. He may even get the Comeback Player of the Year award, just because I feel like, since he's got such a good team surrounding him, this is a horrible division. So that's why I feel like they're easily going to win this division. But I feel like this is a good team for Matt Ryan to be on and round out his career with, just because there's a lot of solid, great players surrounding him. And this defense, this Indianapolis Colts defense, ain't nothing to fuck with. That's for sure. Then finishing in second place in the AFC South, I've got the Tennessee Titans at 9-8. I do think they are going to have a much worse year than they've had the last couple of seasons. They traded away AJ Brown for some stupid ass reason this year. And when they did that, I was like, whoa, I don't know what kind of move that was. Obviously it was a money move. They didn't want to pay him, but AJ Brown has been a huge difference maker for them. Yes, they do have Derrick Henry, the best running back in the league. He's a powerhouse, but now that he's been injured, is that going to be a continued theme for Derrick Henry? Is he going to be as good? Because now that there's no A.J. Brown, there ain't nobody at the wide receiver position. So while the Titans do have a solid offensive line, they do have Derrick Henry at running back. They have Ryan Tannehill at quarterback, and he's okay. He's not that great. And now he has no A.J. Brown at wide receiver, so I don't think the Titans are going to be that good of a team. Their defense, I think, is solid and is going to definitely keep them in some games. But I think this is going to be an up-and-down season for the Titans, and mainly because they traded away AJ Brown. I mean, I don't understand why you trade away a huge piece of your offense like that. That was just stupid, and I think it's going to cost them a win of an easy division. So, good luck, Titans. Then finishing at number three in the AFC South, I've got the Jacksonville Jaguars, who I think are going to go 8-9 this season, which is a good year for the Jaguars, because usually, I mean, they've had the first pick at the draft the last 2 years, so 8-9 is actually not a bad year at all for them. They did lose DJ Chark in the offseason, so he's been their big receiver for the last couple of years. He's not a huge loss. It's not like you lost A.J. Brown, for example, but you did lose a big piece of the offense, so I think that's going to show. But they did pick up Christian Kirk, who I think is about the same caliber, so I think they've got a guy fitting the role. They also picked up Evan Ingram, the tight end, who has he's had some injury issues, but when he's healthy, he's a very solid tight end. So they spent this offseason doing exactly what they needed to do. Not only did they get a good coach in Doug Peterson, who is an offensive-minded coach who's going to definitely help build Trevor Lawrence and make him at least a halfway decent quarterback, because you don't want that first round. You don't want the first overall pick in Trevor Lawrence to go to waste. You want him to at least be a good quarterback. So now he finally has a legitimate coach, an offensive-minded coach, and they took care of that. They also added Brandon Scherff on the offensive line. So their offensive line is stout. They've got a pretty decent receiving core. They're good at the running back position, so they should be good offensively, and they should score some points offensively. Defense is where I kind of feel like all the question marks are going to be, because they didn't really do a lot there. But, I mean, like I said, 8-9 for the Jaguars, that's a good year for them, and there are three fans that are excited about the season. And then rounding out the AFC South, the Houston Texans. I think they're going to go 2-15. I think they're basically going to be right there along with the Atlanta Falcons as one of the worst teams in the league, because if you look at this roster as well, it's also laughable. I'm like, what is wrong with this organization? They did finally trade away Deshaun Watson, which I think is a good move, obviously, because he didn't want to be there. You know, all the PR shit that went on with it, and it's just nice now they can start over. But I just kind of feel like that's all the Houston Texans have done. Their entire existence is just start over, start over, start over, start over. And I mean, God, I just don't understand. Do the Texans want to win? Do they want to be a good franchise? Or do they want to just be like the Detroit Lions and the Cleveland Browns forever, or the Jaguars? I mean, like, don't you want to win? I mean, you're in a state that loves football more than anything. Now, you ain't going to beat out the Cowboys and fans, obviously, but the Texans could easily, I mean, they sell out all the time. Now, I don't think they're going to sell out many games this year because they ain't got a good team, but they have fans, but they just don't want to put shit on the field. And so, yeah, if you want a good laugh, go look at the two rosters for both the Atlanta Falcons and the Houston Texans, because you're just going to be like, who the hell are all these people? I don't know who's going to be the quarterback. I don't know who's going to be the running back. One of their draft pick receiver, he got cancer. So it's just like, what is wrong with this team? They should like have to forfeit being a team at this rate, because you know what? Even though I just mentioned the Lions and the Browns, at least they're historic teams. At least, like, when the NFL, hell, those two teams were around when it wasn't even the NFL. They were around when teams were just like, when there was like 10 teams and football just started playing. So they at least have like some type of history, deep rooted culture. They've got a solid, crazy fan base. They just can't win. But like I said, and hell, even the Browns actually, well, the Lions too, actually, they both pre-NFL used to be two really amazing football teams. So they at least have these histories, but man, the Houston Texans, they ain't got no history. They are just, their only history is being a laughing stock. And they just, I feel like that's all they want to be, is a laughing stock of the league. So it's going to be a long season for the Texans yet again. Them and the Falcons going to be battling it out for that first overall pick next year. So we'll see who gets it. They're probably going to be battling it out as well for who goes the longest without a win this season. And, so that's what you can expect from those two teams. So those are my predictions on the AFC and NFC South teams. Like I said, on Friday, I will go over the, AFC and NFC West season predictions. And I hope you all enjoy the week of baseball, and I will talk to you guys on Friday.